Chris.
Heath.
Man, I feel like my free trial in adulthood has expired.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I feel like the need to pee more often and my right hand hurts from clicking the mouse pad too frequently. And then my car's registration is going to expire this month. Or not registration, inspection.
I see.
So things are coming in quick.
Yeah, your body is deteriorating far faster than you or I anticipated. Have you been neglecting working out?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, maybe you should start that back up in your abundant free time.
Well, I'll start that back up as soon as I start my video game playing back up, because I have been underperforming in both respects.
Okay, so I should lower my expectations for the big Witcher 3 blowout conversation.
Man, and I, on top of that, I freaking updated my schedule.
The Mobius Tube schedule.
Yeah, I got rid of 13 Sentinels, and I moved things around.
You also changed the artwork of the schedule.
I also changed the artwork. Why else would you change your schedule if not to change the artwork? Be that as it may, I'm still pumped for this episode. We haven't had one in so long.
Yeah, I needed a break. That's my fault. But we're back. I'm energized. It's 2021.
Oh, is this the first episode of 2021?
Yeah, because last one went up on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a whole new year.
And I'm thriving.
You're thriving.
No. How are you, Chris?
Oh, I'm great. Yeah, I'm fantastic. My enthusiasm for video games has returned after a couple...
After board games tickled your fancy?
Yeah, I was kind of in a board game mood for the end of 2020. And the games weren't... they just weren't quite doing it for me. Luigi's Mansion 3 left me cold.
Mm.
The fall made me want to kill myself, amongst other things. But I'm back. Should we dive into things, Heath?
Yeah, let me hear you.
All right. We don't need to talk about this, but I did finish up my Dishonored replay through, and it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Really pleased how well that game held up. But getting into new games that we haven't talked about before. First one, Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, the first one?
The first Ori game,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the new exciting Will of the Wisps. I've been sleeping on this series for a long time.
Dude.
What?
You should have said, I've turned a blind eye to this series.
You're right. That would have been a much better segue.
Mm.
But these games are made by Moon Studios. Fun fact, they're a team that has always worked remote, even pre-COVID times.
That's the way to do it.
Seemingly, they were totally unaffected by the whole pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But Ori and the Blind Forest blew me away. I was shocked how much I liked this game. If you're looking for a 10-hour Metroidvania experience, I don't know how you could do better than this.
I don't know enough Metroidvanias to be contrarian.
I guess maybe I probably don't know enough to make that claim definitively, but I'm still going to say it.
That's why I'll get back to you.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I've been sleeping on this game for 5 years now. A couple things.
Have you been snory?
What is snory?
Instead of Ori. Stop me whenever.
I like that. Yeah, I'd heard people, when they talk about this game, they mentioned, oh, it's like surprisingly tough for such a cutesy looking game.
Oh, yeah, because you got a Celeste all over the place.
Yeah, heavy platforming in it. And that kind of turned me off. I'm not the biggest platforming guy, and I didn't want to bash my head against a wall, just failing over and over again. But no, I found the difficulty curve perfect. It was smoother than I thought it was going to be. So this is the game where you play as Ori, who's a little like forest spirit.
A little androgynous, wispy-looking figment.
Yeah. And at least in this first game, the forest has been corrupted and you're going to go save it. The whole narrative aspect of this game.
Very Spirit Island.
Yeah, I guess it is a little Spirit Islandy. There are no colonists though.
Darn.
Just an angry owl.
Like BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, so many comparisons we can make to Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of a narrative to go off of here. I mean, there's a little bit. It has a surprisingly tear-jerking opening 5 minutes, very up-flavored.
Oh.
But then after that, which had me on the verge of tears, the story takes a backseat for the rest of the runtime, which is fine because the platforming is so gosh darn good.
Because you're just thwipping around.
You, all right, so.
Instead of Hollow Knight's double jumps, you have Ori's grapple goo.
Grapple goo. There is one standout ability in this Metroidvania game. It's called Bash. Anyone who's played it will immediately know what I'm talking about. This is an ability you get pretty early on, definitely in the first third of the game, where anytime you are close to a projectile or an enemy, you can hit the Y button on your controller and it'll freeze time and you can like spring off of the projectile, giving yourself momentum in any direction you want to send yourself.
Very Cuphead.
Yeah, because there's like a deflecting thing you do in Cuphead.
You counter the pink stuff, pink projectiles.
But what in Ori, every projectile is pink because you can bash off of anything.
Cool.
And there's a cool side effect, that being the projectile you bash off of gets flung in the opposite direction as you, which gives this ability so much versatility. A lot of the time, you're going to be using it just as like a kind of like a triple jump in the air because you can do your double jump, but then you can also bash off of something. So it's great for your maneuverability, but you can also use it offensively. When enemies are shooting at you, you can just send the projectiles right back at them. You can use it to get enemies out of your way if you bash off the body of an enemy, or if you're really clever, you can like send enemies just off a cliff or into spikes if you bash them at the right angle. So bashing, they nailed the feel of it, and its utility is off the charts. It never gets old. It is a great ability. If Ori was lacking this bash, my enjoyment would be 20 to 30% less. It is significant.
So it has to be in Will-O-The-Wisps.
Oh, yeah. And I can confirm it is in Will-O-The-Wisps.
Okay.
Just from seeing trailers and stuff. It is maybe like bash is the most integral part of Ori's identity.
Mm.
It's like if Mario couldn't jump.
Okay, yeah.
It's that critical. But it's not the only point of praise.
The art looks fine.
Oh, anyone who's seen Ori doesn't need me to tell you how pretty it looks. It has a equally compelling soundtrack, especially during the nail-biting escape sequences. Some of the music that plays during those gives you the willpower to keep trying. Because those are those are the difficulty choke points of this game.
The ramp.
It doesn't have boss battles, just these platforming escape challenges.
Oh, scary thing on the left side of the screen. If you're not fast enough, will eat you.
It's not even necessarily that. It's more of natural environments or natural hazards, like a flood filling up your screen from the bottom.
Ah, from the bottom.
From the bottom, not the left.
Okay.
So things like that. It has some other cool, unique ideas you don't see in many other games, like how it handles...
I've already named a number of things that I've seen from other games.
But not this. Saving the game is a resource. Kind of like how I think...
Kind of like Omicron the Nomad Soul.
Excuse me?
You can use the same save resource to access hints.
Oh, okay.
So they're both like weirdly progression based.
Okay, okay.
What's the resource in Ori? Is it a leaf because it's a forest?
Kind of these like energy cells. Okay. And you start with like one of them. And eventually you'll get many, many more. It's a currency in the game that you have to juggle between using like really powerful attacks or doing like charge maneuvers, but then also saving. It's all this shared resource.
I don't like that.
Why not?
I think you should be able to save all the time.
As a general rule of thumb, I'd agree with that. But it works great here because it's totally up to you when and where you're going to save. So like you approach right before a real difficulty platforming spot, that's a great place to save. Also, kind of like a bonfire thing in Dark Souls, your save points are the only place you can like level up.
Oh, and I guess because it's a Metroidvania, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to play through the same sequence if you die.
Right. It's not super linear. Okay. You can go a different direction. So that's
what kind
to its
of
credit.
Upgrades?
Oh, there's like, it's a pretty big skill tree. There's three directions you can go down the skill tree. One is primarily combat stuff, mm-hmm. which I ignored. Then there's more of like exploration kind of stuff, which gives you labels things on your map and increases like your
maneuverability.
Yeah. Those were more compelling to me. Increases your like defensiveness and like your resource efficiency. Like it'll make saving, consume less of your energy. Mm. You can invest into that. So I like that utility stuff. That's what I spec'd into.
And then the third one's a gun.
The third one's basically guns. Yeah. I need to finish my before we talk
combat.
Let's finish the saving.
Oh,
idea.
Saving. Man, yeah, this conversation's like a Metroidvania. There's so many ways to go.
And there are. Yeah.
Saving,
putting it in your hands and making it a resource is something I'm often not asked to do in games. Usually it's an autosave or it's like a Dishonored save whenever you're not in combat.
I like the Shovel Knight technique.
That is pretty novel.
Where you can damage the save point for bigger loot.
Yeah, it's a risk versus reward thing.
That feels more well-paced than this, Ori.
Well, you've got to try it yourself. The pacing works fine.
Have you seen my schedule?
Eventually, you'll just have so much energy at your disposal that saving becomes, you don't even sweat it. You can do it whenever you want and have plenty of energy left over. But I heard like maybe launch week of this game when it came out back in March of 2015, they didn't account for people saving right before they hit like an instant kill laser or something. And then people were screwed because every time they'd reload their most recent save, they'd instantly die. Mm-hmm. And then they basically had to start from square one in
There's
the game.
There's no delete closest save point.
They've addressed that. So you can go back like a couple saves if you want to.
Okay.
But that early bug has been removed.
That's a huge QA oversight.
It was, yeah. Happy to say that's no longer in the game. I played through the definitive edition of the game, which had two optional areas that weren't in original Ori. They're optional. You don't need to play them to complete the game, but they come with brand new abilities that weren't in vanilla Ori. One of them you get early.
That's because Ori does look vanilla flavored.
It's very white.
Yeah.
Very glowy. Yeah, there's this Black Root Burrows area. Early on, you can access it. No one's ever tells you to go there, though. And if you complete that area, one of the hardest areas of the game, you get a dash ability.
Oh, bash and a dash?
You can bash and dash.
Game of the year.
What was really interesting to me, though, was vanilla base game Ori didn't have that dash ability in it, which means when I played through the rest of the campaign, I had this extra tool in my tool set that the levels weren't designed.
It trivialized it.
It made it a little easier, yeah.
Okay.
Which I kind of felt rewarded for because that Black Root Burrows area I had to go through to get dash was so hard early on that I was like, oh, I earned this.
Okay.
So it didn't ruin anything. I felt like the balance was still fine. It was just weird to think all these platforming challenges I did from here on out were designed to be completable without needing dash. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's fun. Combat in this game is bad. It's pretty bare bones.
It's just projectile dodging.
There's a little orb who floats around you, and if you mash the X button on your controller, it'll spit out little sparks that'll damage enemies. It doesn't chew through them very fast. You feel kind of ineffective, and there's not a lot of nuance to it. You're just kind of mashing the X button. Eventually, you can do like a stomp attack and stuff, but combat is the low point of this game, but it's not really a criticism of mine. Because how small of a role it plays, there aren't any, like, seal you in a room, have this combat encounter. There aren't boss battles to fight through. It feel like the devs at Moon Studio realized they weren't going to put a lot of time into the combat mechanics, and therefore didn't make it so you have to interact with them all that much. You can kind of just breeze past enemies if you want to, or bash off of them, which is way more fun than fighting them. So, yeah, playing through Ori has elevated Will of the Wisps, its sequel, way up on my priority queue. I really want to play that. That game, the sequel, does have a lot of combat in it, and it has boss battles.
Okay.
So that's a pretty big departure from this one. I'll be curious to see what that's like.
Who voices Ori?
Ori doesn't speak.
Oh, I was hoping it was
There's
like
just a big
Danny DeVito. Or
the only voice acting is a giant tree spirit who speaks in a fake language.
Okay.
Just blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, there isn't a whole lot of story here. But, man, the clip at which they awarded you new abilities and new collectibles, it was very snappy. I never felt like I was just dying for the next thing to finally come my way. Mm-hmm. I was always getting new stuff, which kept me super engaged. And this is a point of praise that applies to all Metroidvanias. But when you double back to previous areas you've been to with your new abilities and you get to plunder it for all the stuff you couldn't get to before, the collectibles in Ori are concentrated enough that you're picking up so much stuff so quickly, it feels
narcotic.
Yeah, it feels like you're on a drug high.
Yeah.
So that was really rewarding. Ori and the Blind Forest was great. I didn't think I was going to like it nearly this much.
Wow. What year did this come out?
2015.
Okay. Which was a great year.
That was a good year for games. Yeah. Don't skip this one if you have. I guess the lasting question I have to ask myself now, Heath, is, am I a Metroidvania guy and I didn't even know it? Because, like, I loved this game and I loved Hollow Knight and I'm pretty fond of, like, Guacamelee, but I haven't played too many other Metroidvanias, but every one I have played has been a big winner for me. Maybe this is just a genre I've been sleeping on. I might be a big fan of it. Or am I just picking the cream of the crop?
Well, what's the not cream of the crop? I don't think we have it super narrowed down yet.
I guess so. Maybe I should play like that Bloodstained game that came out a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
It's supposed to be a successor to Symphony of the Night. But yeah, so Ori was great. Can't wait to play its sequel. I can move on to the other game I've been playing.
Sure.
Couldn't be further away from Ori, and I love it even more. So this is a franchise you were touching last year. This is Total War Warhammer 2 is the game I've been playing.
Okay. Which one is that?
Which one is that?
What does it look like?
It came out in 2017.
It's still medieval, right?
It is based on the Warhammer fantasy
franchise. No, it's a sci-fi one.
It's the fantasy one.
Doesn't it have big metal boot guy?
Who's that?
I'm going by box art.
No, it's got orcs. It's got vampires. It has
elf
undead.
Elf archers. Lots
of elf archers.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Rat men.
What's the continent called?
I believe it's called the New World. It is a bastardization of North and South America and also Africa. I haven't been to Africa, though.
Okay.
Because I am playing...
Neither have I.
I'm playing as the lizard men who start in what would be Central America.
Okay.
They are definitely influenced by Aztec and Mayan cultures.
Mm-hmm.
They've got ziggurats that look like that. Their cities look like those pyramids. They have prophecies. We're trying to enact some prophecies.
Okay.
Yeah, the lizard men, they're a confederation of a bunch of different reptiles. My faction leader, he's a giant toad. His name is Lord Mazdamundi. But the toads, they're fat, they're slow, but they're like big magic users.
Okay.
And then like our rank and file troops are basically, what would I call those? They're like lizard-sized people, people-sized lizards.
Okay.
Lizard-sized people is very different.
Yeah.
And then we've got like crocodile people. You can recruit a stegosaurus as like a big artillery piece.
Do they have a lose your tail but it grow back ability?
Not that I've seen.
Like lizards do?
We've got pterodactyls. I can fly.
This is fantasy. Okay.
Anyway, this is single-digit episodes here, but I did talk about a long time ago how much I like Total War Warhammer 1. And this is the sequel to that game. It is a...
real-time strategy?
Yeah, I mean, you've played the franchise by Creative Assembly, Total War. The battles are real-time, but like on the overworld map...
It's turn-based.
It's turn-based. Okay. It's the classic 4X game franchise. I've been a casual Total War fan for a while. I played Medieval 2 for like 2 hours or something.
I liked Medieval 2.
I played Shogun 2 for more. I finally finished a campaign when I played Rome 2, which was kind of a buggy one. Then I finally really liked Warhammer 1, which I played 3 campaigns in. And Warhammer 2 is my new pinnacle of enjoyment for the franchise.
Wow.
I'm probably going to play it for more than 100 hours. I can see it now. I've only seen one other game franchise do a sequel this way, and that's Hitman. You know how Hitman 2 basically lets you import all of Hitman 1 into it?
Yeah.
And you can play old levels in this updated engine? The same thing applies between Warhammer 2 and Warhammer 1. So because I had all the Warhammer 1 stuff, all of those factions come into Warhammer 2.
Where they would not have been had you not purchased the prequel.
Right. You wouldn't have access to them. So it's kind of like a very generous package. Basically two games in one. There are two flavors of campaign you can play. One is the one that shipped on launch day. It's called the Vortex campaign. That's what I'm playing. There's also one that arrived as DLC, free DLC later, called Mortal Empires, which I said you were playing in like this approximation of New World Americas in the sequel. In the first game, it was set in like Europe. And if you have both games, you can play like one giant campaign. It bolts them together. And you can just play for 1,000 hours that way. I haven't tried that yet. I'm playing the Vortex campaign, which has one big difference than I'm not used to. And that is, there's this vortex in the center of the map. People are trying to control it by doing these rituals. And you need to have like enough knowledge to kick off one of these rituals.
Because otherwise you're like, what's this big vortex doing here?
Yeah, you wouldn't know what to
do. You like throw bricks into it and then the bricks turn into doves and you're like, I don't understand all this.
At least for my faction, to get enough knowledge, I need to collect ancient plaques, which basically every city you control gives you one ancient plaque a turn.
Oh.
Except there are key, hotly contested cities.
How does that? Wait.
What?
You get an ancient plaque every turn as if they're just churning them out?
I'm sure that people are like,
what's the archaeological explanation for that?
I figure they're like buried deep beneath the city and you're just digging them out.
And they come out like clockwork every turn? I don't know about this.
It seems perfectly plausible to me. But there are key cities that will generate 11 times the normal number of plaques per turn.
Because they were just founded on top of a black plaque. What were the ancient plaque factory?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Just a bastion of knowledge.
Uh-huh.
So those are hotly contested. There are three other factions who are really trying to, it's a race basically, who can amass enough knowledge the fastest. So this whole knowledge plaque mechanic, I don't think they maybe did the best job explaining it to me because I completely ignored it for like the first 50 turns of my campaign. So I've been playing catch-up duty. I'm now 120 turns in. I've been playing for like 30 hours. I'm nearing the end game.
Okay.
But the high elves and the dark elves, they were kicking my butt in knowledge. But I'm finally catching up to them because I penetrated deep into South America where it's just Plaque City down there. That's brand new to this installment of the franchise. I like it so far now that I understand it. Now there's like an extra consideration of previously when you're expanding your boundaries in old Total War games, you're just slow and steady wins the race.
It's like War of Attrition Conquest.
Yeah. You don't want to like overextend yourself. Now you have a reason to overextend yourself and like rush for certain cities because they're going to give you so many plaques.
Okay.
So I like that risk versus reward. Why else do I like this one more than any other? It boils down to, and I don't know, I don't have proof for this, but you know how a lot of the time when you're playing a Total War game and you're going to fight someone, you just hit the auto resolve button and the fight just completes for you?
Of course I have, yes.
Yeah, I heavily leaned on that to the point where I would auto-resolve like 90% of my battles in most Total War games. Not the case in this one. I almost wonder if they like tweaked the algorithm so that if you do auto-resolve, it's not as favorable for you. And I'm only playing on normal difficulty here. So, and it's not like I'm playing on the
extreme.
That
was enough to persuade you.
Yeah. So since if I mash auto-resolve all the time, my army would be
stalemate.
Rough shape.
Okay.
It would probably win, but then be too crippled to advance further for a while. So I'm fighting battles more often on like the real-time strategy map. I'm playing that way. And I remarked earlier how that was maybe my least favorite part of these games, how it almost felt kind of fuzzy having that real-time battle, because it felt like a bit of a mosh pit to me. You just kind of advance at the nearest guys and you fight and you don't really...
I can't tell whether or not it's responding as it happens. I'll tell guys to course correct and they'll just kind of be in the fog.
Not doing exactly what you wanted them to?
You know, I'll click on the map, be like, go here. And then I'll hear my commander be like, with me, lizard boys.
Okay.
And then like the troops will just kind of swarm in a way that's sort of in the direction I want it to go, but they're still fighting. And it's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to expect here.
Okay. I can relate to those feelings. Especially when like someone's in a fight and you tell them to go fight someone else and it kind of takes them a while to disengage.
Right.
There's that.
But in Total War 40K Hammer 2, what's this game called?
Warhammer 2.
Total War that?
Warhammer 2.
Okay, thank you. Gosh.
They did miss the opportunity to call it just Total Warhammer 2. It would have been a much neater title.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, often in these battles, I wouldn't feel like, oh yeah, I clearly made the right move here. I never often felt super smart. I just felt like my army was bigger and therefore I won. Mm. But here, I've been fighting the battles with enough regularity that I'm getting better at them. I'm understanding them.
Oh.
Not like previously.
You're more fluent.
Yeah, I'm more fluent. And it's actually a lot of fun now.
I'll take your word for it.
Like, I'm starting to do things like hide units in the forest. Often cavalry. And then I have my big battle line. I wait for the armies to engage. And then the cavalry comes sweeping out of the forest, no longer hidden, and come crashing
them.
Against their like range units in the back. That's an amazing play to pull off. I know more about favorable matchups.
Pikemen.
Of course, sending your spearmen against enemy large units and cavalry. That's what they're meant for. And
rock, paper, scissors.
Keeping your squishy units protected. Yeah, rock, paper, scissors. It's a big game of rock, paper, scissors. And I finally understand how to play. And now that I do, it's finally good. I've always been a fan of turn-based strategy games.
Into the Breach.
We don't need to list them all. But
yeah.
And I've been reluctant to play these real-time ones. But now I finally understand the appeal, I think, because it, at least for me, it feels more like an immersive battle because it's less abstracted. You're actually seeing like in real time the forces collide. It's not like I'm going to take my turn, you're going to take your turn. And it's like this weird abstract battle going on.
Hmm.
I like the realism of it. I like the battles. And finally, we're getting down to the last point of praise for this game is just how regularly it's churning out dynamic storytelling moments for me. Now, these are just like things that are happening in my campaign that weren't authored or anything, but I find ceaselessly entertaining.
Is this like royal family shenanigans?
Early game, it's very tutorialized for you. Like it sets up, okay, you should probably fight this faction first. And it was like some Norskins. They're basically like human raiders from the icy north.
Okay.
And they're hanging out on Central America for some reason. And your first objective is very much kick them off. They're not supposed to be here. So I'm just wiping the floor with them. They're down to their last settlement. Their armies are completely depleted. I'm moving in on them like one turn away. And with their dying breath, they enlist this dark elf flotilla army on the seas of my coast with like a full stack army, and they bring them into the war against me just like with diplomacy. And this about to be completely erased from history faction has just embroiled me in a much bigger conflict. And it's like, damn, I wish I had killed you faster. And then there's like undead pirates, an undead pirate faction who, they were trespassing on my land. They might have just been passing through. I'm not sure. I'll never know.
Johnny Depp just walks onto your land.
On this faction called the Drowned. And they were on my turf, so I declared war on them and wiped them off. They had one settlement. Mm-hmm. They were wimps. It's on this peninsula to my north.
Tortuga.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And they kept sending, like turn after turn, this army that had no hope of ousting me, but it kept arriving at my doorstep and distracting me from what I really wanted to be doing.
Like chip damage, yeah.
They were just being petty about it. And I didn't want their land because they were living on this like corrupted, gross peninsula that would have been
resource heavy,
too costly
around
for me to take. So I don't want to like really fight them. I wanted to end the conflict. But because they were so petty, I had to launch an expedition basically as genocide against them just to wipe them out for good. sack their city, raise it to the ground, and then return home.
Oh, wow.
Because I couldn't occupy their gross land. So those are fun stories. There are many more.
Tell me, when you get your first ancient plaque, yeah. are the enemy factions constantly bringing up the diplomacy thing and being like, you want to trade that ancient plaque for like three wool? Because that's the problem I was having with Troy.
You know, I think it might have to do with the faction I'm playing. People don't want to talk to me. no one wants to be in diplomatic relations. I think it's because my main leader, the giant toad, is so ugly. So I'm only able to be friends with other ugly people.
That's the life.
There are the tomb kings to the north. They're like ancient Egyptian pyramid guys.
Uh-huh.
Who for the longest time, we were at war with. No blows were exchanged, but we were technically at war. Until one day he said, let's have a peace treaty. Let's be the best of friends now. And now he is my one stalwart ally against all the dark elves. And we're having a great old time trading goods and stuff. He's my one friend. Even the other lizard factions were slower to be friends with me than this Tomb King guy.
What a nice guy.
I know. Oh, there was one bitch, Gentleman Jenkins. Gentleman Jenkins.
Okay, by the sound of this, it's like the colonial... You made me think of Pirates of the Caribbean with your undead pirate faction. So this is like the British in East India Company.
He's a pretty good analog for that.
Okay.
He lives on a ship. He doesn't control any territory. He's got a big army for hire. He's basically a mercenary.
Okay.
And he was getting too close to my coast. So I said, hey, Jenkins, here's a bribe. How about a non-aggression pact? So we're just going to be cool.
Mm.
And he accepted.
Okay.
Two turns later, he declared war on me.
Wow.
So a betrayal. And then, because he's such a wimp, he never invaded. He's just been lingering on my coast, waiting for like dozens of turns. We have only just now reconciled and finally have peace again.
Needless.
And I could keep going, but you get the picture here. There's a lot of cool dynamics at play. I've got big plans. I'm getting in the late game. It's going to be the final part I'm interested in once we get down to like nearly across the finish line, myself and the other three factions I'm racing against. Maybe.
And once you get to the void, what's it called?
The vortex.
You win.
I'm not sure exactly what the final climax is. I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
I don't have enough knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm
in both regards.
I'm wondering, though, once it gets down to like that final finish line, maybe I will have enough resources at my disposal to send my armies like across the world to interfere with the other factions that are conducting rituals to race me. So like the high elves live really far away, like in north of Africa. And I'm in Central America. And like maybe I send an expedition over there
to mess with them
and slow them down. But I haven't gotten to that point yet. I wonder if it's going to be necessary. But that's the great time I've been having with this game. It's really my cup of tea.
Total War. Yeah. So this is quickly climbing your logged hours on Steam.
It is. Yeah. The hours, they pass by faster than almost any other game.
Good. Cool.
And that's everything I've been playing and everything you've been playing.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's time for news. See you then.
And we're back.
And we're back. Well, Heath, there's definitely a lot going on in the world these days. What about in the world of video games?
Somewhat less going on.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
One might even say only three things going on.
I've got a fourth thing.
Oh, okay. You want to do that?
No, we can do your stuff.
All right, let's start with Dishonored because you mentioned it briefly. Dishonored...
This is a weird story.
Was embroiled in the Capitol storming that happened in America recently, where there was rumors that This is a rumor by conservatives that there were Antifa insurrectionists among the people who stormed the Capitol, and you could tell because they went by this symbol.
Tattooed on his hand.
Yeah. And they were like, see, it's an Antifa symbol.
Right.
To which the creator of Dishonored, what's his name? Harvey Smith.
Arcane Studios had Harvey Smith.
Yeah, so he had to go on Twitter and be like, that's not an Antifa symbol. That's the mark of the outsider.
Yes.
Which is very funny. And just a wild coincidence for Dishonored to get looped into politically the weirdest event of this decade.
I heard people saying like, oh, it's the hammer and sickle for communism, but
doesn't even look barely.
Upon not even that close inspection, you can clearly see it's not that. I feel bad for the people at Arcane to be even remotely associated with this like attempted coup. I imagine it's kind of like how the cartoonist who made Pepe the Frog, how he might feel to have like made this frog who eventually becomes a hate symbol.
A 4chan darling, yeah.
I imagine the mark of the outsider isn't going to blow up into this symbol of
just you wait
toxicity, but if it were to happen, it would be like analogous to the Pepe situation. But yeah, I just feel bad that Dishonored of all games has to be somehow embroiled in this event.
It's silly. Yeah.
It's quite the coincidence.
Yeah. Next, we move over to Twitch, which is similarly embroiled in the controversy. So they dropped the face of PogChamp. Chris, where have you seen PogChamp?
I have only started seeing PogChamp after it was banned.
Okay. I imagine that Alexis may have seen it among her students. Who would just be like, oh man, that's so, check out this new shirt I got. Oh man, Pog.
Yeah, she hears them say poggers.
Yeah, poggers, mate.
Which I believe is related to this, right?
Yes. Okay. So it was just the name of the emote of the guy making an excited O face who has since been dropped from the platform. And who did they replace his face with as the face of PogChamp? It's going to be a revolving door. Every 24 hours, the face of PogChamp will change.
Oh.
So it could very well be me.
I know what face you're going to have. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. I could be PogChamp. That's a good PogChamp.
That would be pretty good. Yeah.
As far as like Twitch separating themselves from politics, this was the right way to go, making it a 24-hour, constantly refreshes spectacle of, while still making the emote. They couldn't just ban PogChamp like they did with Simps.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, you know what I mean by that.
They definitely didn't go with like the easiest solution to the problem. It took some effort to like have this rotating emote now.
Yeah.
Maybe you can shed some light on this for me, Heath. The man whose face is known as PogChamp.
Yeah, Gutex.
What is Pog? Is Pog an acronym for play of the game?
No. The etymology of it. Shortly after the 2011 Pogs Championship video.
Which is where the face was originally made.
I think it was just a fighting game tournament.
Okay.
And that's the source of, yeah, the name of the tournament. Is the name of the meme. We found it. Okay.
And I don't know, did we bury the lead on this? The emote of PogChamp was removed because the man whose face is PogChamp said some questionable stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Related to the storming of the Capitol.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe it was like coronavirus.
Okay. So many things you could say questionable things about.
Oh, yeah. The list goes on. So that was Twitch in the news. And then lastly, we move over to Polygon because Brian David Gilbert has since left and pursued his own Patreon-flavored endeavors. Brian David Gilbert, you know, as the prolific face of Polygon, effectively.
I was going to call him the face of Polygon.
Yeah, because he makes the fun videos.
Yeah, kind of surprising to call him the face of Polygon considering he's been there for all of 3 years.
Right. Prolific in a brief way.
Yeah, his rise to stardom was Didn't take very long.
Uh-huh. And as you might expect, I unsubscribed from Polygon.
Because what else is there?
I'm just going to watch him. Yeah. There's no shortage of video superstars that I follow. And I'm only loyal to them. I'm not loyal to the company that pays them.
Right. Yeah. Why would you be?
I don't watch Kotaku. I watch Tim Rogers. I don't watch SB Nation. I watch John Boyce. It's so emblematic.
Yeah. I don't need IGN's coverage of a news story. I'm just there
just
for
Greg Miller.
The personalities.
Okay.
Whoever they be.
Inside Gaming. They went over to Rooster Teeth. Yeah. You follow the funny instead of the money. That was good.
That was good.
Yeah. We wish Brian David Gilbert the best.
Did you hear about any of his reasons for leaving?
No. And I think he left on good terms because the head of video over at Polygon was in his last Unraveled.
What is an Unraveled?
Oh, that's his series over at Polygon where he reads all the Skyrim books. He likens Mortal Kombat characters to like office employee archetypes.
I saw the one where he read all the Halo books.
Yeah, too. Yeah. That's it for that news.
Okay.
I have a bit that I am just recalling, Chris.
Okay. You want to squeeze it in?
Yeah. Like 10 minutes before you got here, I was scrolling through Twitter and I found one of the better video game commercials of late. Have you seen this Walmart commercial?
No.
This Walmart commercial, I'm going to play it with no volume.
I want volume.
Right, so it goes through the eras. You start in like the 80s or 90s with the original Xbox.
Uh-huh.
And then, ooh, smooth transition to the modern era. He picks up his 360, baby in hand. Baby is now a toddler. Look, come, Dad. It's the Xbox One. So happy. Super smooth transition to her adulthood. And he's like, ha ha, we've been bonding since you've been prepubescent. And then they play the Series X. And I was just like, wow. Because I've worked on commercials like this. And I was like, this is like super clean. How he goes from like a child. Look at the sleeve where they freeze frame it. See, now he's a teen. And you didn't even realize it. Look at that ball cap. Look at the Walmart logo change. Back then, they didn't have like the orange star next to their logo. It was only a
it's period appropriate.
Look at this pegboard white thing that's so iconic of the early 2000s GameStop stores.
Yeah.
And then look, the star thing is there. And of course, they have a Kinect display. And then, yeah, modern living room.
And this was great.
Yeah.
Although, is it a Walmart commercial or is it an Xbox commercial?
Both. It's
who do we give credit to for this?
This is buy your Xbox Series X at Walmart.
It'll
as
let
much
you
as
make
like
a family.
Buy this game on PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
So the follow-up question is, Chris, what are some of your favorite video game commercials? The ones that come to mind are the Halo 3 diorama one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that on a television, though.
Mm-hmm. Only in video essays. And what also comes to mind is the two guys that bring the Wii to your house.
We would like to play.
Everybody using the Wii remote.
The Japanese businessmen.
Outstanding. That's always a good one. What's the worst video game commercial? It's the tier one.
The tier one?
So it's basically just like a super conceited Death Stranding is such an emotionally rapturing game that you're going to cry tears. You're going to well up at how good the story is. It's going to submerge the whole city. So this is, why is it all underwater? And it starts to drain. And little do you know that it's going in reverse. Back to the source. What is the source?
It's Norman Reedus.
Yeah, you were crying that hard for the story in Death Stranding, a game that we don't need to discuss as far as the story.
To be fair, though, that was a very well shot commercial.
Yeah, but the implications.
The implications are stupid.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to pull up like the baby PlayStation 3 commercial.
I'm not familiar with that one, I don't think.
That's early PlayStation 3 commercials were weird.
Uh-huh.
Like the one about a man who gets ejected from the birthing canal and then flies through the air and ages and then lands in his coffin.
Oh my God.
You should find that one. Oh, well, there's the baby one.
Okay.
This is different. And you wonder why the Xbox 360 sold a lot more early on. Oh, there it is. Life is short. Oh, it was an Xbox commercial.
Oh. So it's going to fly out. Oh, oh my God. This goes on for so long. Life is short, play Xbox.
So Xbox and PlayStation both have horrible baby-related commercials.
Staggering. That's amazing.
I'm surprised you hadn't seen that before.
If I did, I blanked it from memory. And that's it for my news.
Well, I'll just sneak in with one news here. I just want to readdress how bad of a show it has become getting a graphics card.
Oh, I was going to ask you about this.
If we thought 2020 was a bad year to try to buy a graphics card, it has gotten exponentially worse.
Because this is the fallout of the botting.
Yes. So, as was the case for many consumer electronics at the end of 2020, without retail channels servicing a lot of them, and with everyone stuck at home wanting entertainment, and with the prevalency of bots snatching up inventory, it was really hard getting next-gen consoles and new high-end graphics cards.
Get them while they're hot.
This was the case for NVIDIA's new 3000 series. This was the case for AMD's new graphics cards. In fact, I appeared on episode 50, which was launch day, way back in September, naively thinking, I think I said, oh, we'll have to wait 2 to 3 months, and then people who want them will be able to get them.
That would have been Thanksgiving.
No, that would have been middle of December-ish.
Yeah, okay.
But not only has the situation failed to improve, it has gotten much worse.
Exacerbated.
Here's where we stand currently, Heath. Not only is demand way, way higher than supply, but we now have to contend with, at the start of the new year, 2021, January 1st, Trump's tariff exceptions expired on consumer electronics, in this case, graphics cards, coming out of China. Meaning, these graphics cards, which throughout all of 2020 were exempt from his China tariffs, are now no longer exempt, which means kicking off January 1st of this year, prices have increased 25% across the board for graphics cards entering the U.S. from China.
Haven't they already been manufactured? Or
it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Whether they were manufactured there already or in the past.
Or just coming off the assembly line. Okay.
All manufacturers have increased the prices, and based on the fact that they are still being bought up instantaneously, even if the tariffs go away, people are suspecting the prices may never come back down. Because like if people are buying them at these inflated prices anyway, why bother lowering the price if inventory still sells out in split seconds? So that's an issue. But that's only the first punch of this new conflict. We have a new...
Add insult to injury.
To pour more salt in the wound, Bitcoin has had a resurgence.
It took a dive, right?
No, in mid-December, Bitcoin started skyrocketing, the value of a single Bitcoin.
Uh-huh.
I think it was around... Early December, it was maybe like $18,000 for one Bitcoin. It has approached $40,000, doubling in price.
That's insane.
Which means mining is now lucrative again. So every miner has rekindled their forge.
Set their sights on the GTX.
And re-entered the snapping up of GPUs battle. Because it would be a miscategorization to call this buying of a GPU anything other than a battle currently. So yeah, GPU mining is now hot again. Well, throughout 2019,
Bitcoin mining,
yeah, cryptocurrency mining.
And the GPU is the pickaxe.
And that's what you use to mine. demand, it is disgusting.
It'll go back down for like a summer sale, right? That's wishful thinking.
Here's fun anecdotes.
Yay.
So not only are the new graphics cards completely unavailable,
the
old ones are gone. We have a friend, a mutual friend.
I was going to ask, yeah. He sold something.
We won't name him, but...
Is he a scalper?
No. Okay. He's just a lucky beneficiary.
Okay.
Because he built a computer in April 2020, those halcyon days before this all
halcyon,
happened.
Halcyon. What a word.
That just means like happy times.
Okay. But so is like Elysium.
Yeah. He bought a 2000 series NVIDIA GPU for $400 in April of 2020.
Yeah.
Used it up until now. Decided to sell it at this point in time.
Because he was going to upgrade anyway, yeah.
Yeah. And he made a profit on it. He sold it for $450.
Amazing.
This isn't even current gen technology. It is used, outdated graphics card. He can sell at a profit in the current environment because all GPUs are in such hot demand. I went on eBay just for curiosity's sake. My GPU, which came out in early 2017, it is 4 years old. I bought it for $600 back then. I can sell it used on eBay right now without even breaking a sweat for $550. It is depreciated that little because no one can get their hands on anything. It is a bad situation.
This is like you buy a pair of shoes and then you wear them regularly. And they've gotten like
soles.
Broken in, worn in, smelly.
Soles are worn out.
You can still turn a profit if you were going to sell them.
Yes.
Because people are desperate for these Air Jordans.
They're just nowhere to be found.
Unthinkable.
NVIDIA recently came out to address the situation and basically said, there's no hope until after April.
Manufacturing-wise?
Yeah, because I guess there are manufacturing issues with COVID. They cannot ramp things because they're competing with the same factories that are making PlayStation 5s, that are making Xbox One
X. You need to call Phil Spector.
Spencer.
And tell him to stop the presses. We don't need more PS5. Cyberpunk doesn't work yet. Switch production to these GPUs so we can get the big PCs and then turn on the PS5 assembly line.
So
I'm going to get him on the phone.
So I have given up hope of getting anything. Yeah,
this is big F to pay respects.
It is big F to pay respects. It is particularly salty for people who were there in 2020 with money in hand, ready to go, just couldn't hand it over. And now with like the tariff increasing prices, it's like, what were you supposed to do? I could console myself knowing, eventually stock will come into supply and I can buy one of these. But now it's like, even when stock comes back, I'm going to have to pay a higher price than the people who were able to get the early ones.
Wow, dude.
It's not fun.
This is abysmal.
It's maybe the worst time to ever build a computer.
But it's not NVIDIA's fault.
Like, I mean, kind of is. Like,
wait, it's the worst time to build a computer? I mean, that's one part, my guy.
It's the most expensive part.
Okay.
It's the part that'll let you play the video game.
I guess is why you're building the computer.
I guess, like, if you want to build a computer to do office work, I guess it's a fine time to do it.
Yeah.
If you had to predict,
who would have thought?
Pull a date out of your ass, Heath. When do you think you could go, like, order a GPU on any given day?
Summer sale. Oh, order a GPU?
Like, there will be stock if you want it. Stock will be readily available.
I don't
when do you
know,
think
dude.
That date
I
will be?
Had I been right there with you back in November, and even like if I had money to burn, and I was teasing the idea of getting you one for Christmas, because I wouldn't really get one for myself. I don't need it. Then I would be able to make an educated guess as to when.
Okay.
Answer for me.
You say like, if I had been there, I would be able to make an educated guess. I have no idea. In my head, worst case scenario is fall of this year.
Wow, dude.
I just hope that is in fact the worst case scenario and it's not next year.
Who'd have thought? Okay.
So that's all the news.
Yeah.
And we'll take a break and come back with some fun fantasy drafts.
Come back for some Moneyball.
Yeah. See you then. Is that for me?
Cue the... No, it's for me.
All right.
Do you want to see what this looks like?
Oh.
I am not using the regular break music. I'm using baseball music.
I like it. All right. Welcome back. We are here We're here to resolve the Mobius Tubes 2020 Fantasy Draft and begin anew for 2021. The final check-in... Heath's fantasy company.
You got to say it like Heath.
Heath.
Yeah.
Was bested by the quintessential Chris Games. I doubled your score.
I made it into the triple digits.
I ended up with 225 fantasy points against Heath's 111.
Quick. What was the average Metacritic rating for a game in my selection?
Wait, do you want to just include the ones that released, or like even the ones that didn't release, which would have netted you 0 points? Because I can run the numbers right now either way. Because you got 11 releases, which means you averaged about 10 points per release.
Which would have been an 80.
Which would have been an 80.
Okay.
15 of my games came out, which right there is an advantage since more of mine came out. But then my average score would be 15 points per game. So like an 85.
Okay. That's less exciting than I thought it was going to be, but...
So yeah, my average game score was higher and more of my games came out. So that's why there's such a big discrepancy there.
Yep.
The one that pulled its weight the most for you, Heath, was Crusader Kings 3.
Who would have thought?
Which is a fun one, which with a score of 91 on OpenCritic. My MVP was Hades. With a 94.
Which you knew all along.
I knew all along.
You knew that was going to be your secretariat. I had no idea. I actually had no idea.
It performed better than I was expecting it to.
Okay.
But yeah, I had faith in it, for sure. Right. All right, so because I was the winner, Heath is making an Assassin's Creed quest for me to play.
And that'll get done when it gets done. I focused on this before I did
sure.
that.
But that means it's time to start a new year for new games. Once again, Heath and I are taking on the roles of a fictitious video game publisher, competing not for the most sales, but for the most critically acclaimed games. There's a point scoring system. You basically, every OpenCritic point a game gets above a 70 counts as positive points for your team, while every point below a 70 will count against you. There'll be negative points. Higher scores, the better. Last year, we both drafted a total of 20 games. I could be convinced to keep it at 20. I was thinking maybe bump it down to like 16.
Lower works for me.
Okay. Do you want to make it 15 or 16? If we do 16, I was thinking we can draft
eight later.
Now and eight throughout the year.
Mm.
That was my like loose plan, but I'm open to other ideas.
I'm fine with that.
All right, then we'll do a total.
Wait, but we still have $100 to spend?
You will. So prices will be inflated.
Okay.
Actually, last year.
That's annoying.
It'll be the same, actually. Last year, we bid on 8 games each, but we drafted 12 initially.
Okay. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you want to get rid of counter picks?
Why would we?
Last year, we did 2 counter picks apiece.
Oh, the reason we would is because now that we know what we're doing, we're not going to pick any games that are under 70. So it's really just mitigating loss.
Yeah.
Which isn't really fun.
It's not as much fun. It kind of muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more confusing for the listeners to follow.
Yeah.
Okay, then we're going to cut counter picks and reduce our total rosters to only 16 games.
Okay.
8 of which we're going to pick right here, right now.
Oy vey.
Remember, the games we're picking to be eligible for points need to release in 2021. If we learned anything from last year, it's that Picking games that release is harder than it sounds.
No, we had to deal with a global virus last time.
And it's still happening.
Yeah, but now everybody's playing the game.
Okay, I have admin privileges, so I am starting.
Well, wait, are we going to rename our publishers?
Oh, do you want to?
If a publisher has a bad year, they don't really change their name to save face, so maybe we keep them.
I'm fine with that.
Didn't Namco Bandai change to Bandai Namco? Maybe I changed to something like that. Here, I'll do it for mine.
Okay.
Is this me?
Wait, no. What? Don't do that.
It's the only button worth doing.
Oh, we need to talk about this. Eligibility. So we are banning things that are expansions, ports, remasters, director's cut. Get rid of things that are currently in early access. Ban that. Are you cool with that?
Yes.
Free-to-play should be fine as long as it releases. New games, of course. Something that's planned for early access, that's even worse than regular early access.
Wait, no, if it's planned for early access, it's not out yet. Or is that something like Destiny?
A game that is planned to release in early access.
But it's not playable yet. Yeah, that's eligible.
Oh.
Give an example of why it shouldn't be eligible.
It shouldn't be eligible because, for example, one game I picked last year, Baldur's Gate 3, released in early access in 2020, and no one reviewed it because it was in early access.
But you could still play it.
You could play it.
And know how good it is.
Yeah. Either way, it kind of accomplishes the same thing. Either we don't allow it, or we do allow it, but then the person who picks something is probably going to get burned by it because it's not going to get like a score.
Oh, okay.
Like you had Rogue Legacy 2, and you didn't get points for it because no one reviewed Rogue Legacy 2 because it's not fully out yet.
Fine. All right.
Are you cool with yearly installment games?
Yes.
This is like this year's FIFA.
Those should be eligible.
Those are eligible.
Okay. They're not going to appear, so it's fine.
I'm fine with that. Will release internationally first. I vote we ditch it.
Why?
Because it's probably not going to get Open Critic scores. Because Open Critic is like American.
Dude, if something comes in Japan and then goes to North America, like freaking Brain Age isn't in America yet. For this, but that's a port, anyways. No, that's fine.
No,
Chris.
I'm inclined to get rid of remake as
you
well.
You know what? Get rid of a new game while you're at it.
All right. Does this look fine?
Yes.
All right. Start the drafting. The draft order is locked in. I think it's going to decide for us.
It shouldn't. Oh, because you're the king.
However, you'll get to pick two in a row after me.
The snake is on.
The snake draft is on. Okay.
Welcome back, everybody, to the 2021 Mobius Tubes Fantasy Critic Video Game Publisher Extravaganza. Last we checked, Chris was about to nominate Deathloop for Game of the Year.
I am, let's not beat around the bush here, Heath. I'm opening with the dirtiest of plays.
What? You gonna do
my first draft pick?
A $1
is going to be.
Yeah.
Oh, we're.
I'm gonna siphon you for everything you got.
And the thing that's happening today, I don't believe there's any bidding involved.
What?
Like I'm gonna pick one game and it's mine, and then you're gonna pick two and they're yours.
No. What happened to money?
That's
what
for
happened to budget.
Those are the for
is
the.
Is that there for decoration?
Those are for the 8 games we bid on throughout the year.
No.
This is what we did last year.
No.
Yes. This is exactly how it happened last year.
No.
If you listen to episode 31 or whatever it is, we claim the games in the snake draft, and then bidding on games only occurs throughout the year.
No.
I guarantee it.
I don't believe this. I have two columns for asking price and pricing and get away with and max bid and points per dollar. What am I doing here?
Do you want to make it so we bid on everything?
Is that not how fantasy football works?
It's not how this traditionally works. Like a draft doesn't have
bidding. This is going to be so boring. Oh, you're right. Drafts don't really have bidding.
No.
That's an auction.
Yeah.
Oh.
We can edit the settings so that we bid on everything.
And that would be more fun for the listener. No, it wouldn't. The back and forth would be kind of like, ah. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. The dirty play I had in mind was my first draft is going to be your first draft from last year. Because it didn't come out. I'm going to grab Hollow Knight Silk Song because it's got to come out this year, right? It's a bit of a risk. Team Cherry's been mostly quiet. They said a few things lately. Still no confirmation. But here we go. Hollow Knight Silk Song. A game that, if it comes out, will surely be great.
Great job.
Now you get two in a row.
I get two in a row? Well, I guess I'm just going to go in order. Yeah, fine. I'll get God of War and Deathloop.
Ooh. This is God of War Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
And my beloved Deathloop, the game from Arkane, kind of a successor to Dishonored with a time loop assassin. You know Deathloop was going to be up in my priorities, so that hurts, but I respect it. God of War Ragnarok, yeah, Sony did say it's coming out this year. I don't personally believe them, though. But if it does, you're going to rake in the points. I guess the only thing that gives me pause is they've only shown a logo so far. Very little. All right, I get to pick two. I'm slipping this one right before it comes out. So at the very least,
Hitman 3.
I know it's coming out. I'm going to pick up Hitman 3 from IO Interactive.
Okay.
They're on a hot streak.
I thought it was going to get an 86.
Ooh.
So good on you.
It comes out in like 3 days.
Yeah.
So at least it's going to come out.
With this episode.
Yeah, it'll be out before this episode airs.
Yeah.
So I'm confident about them and their pedigree. Next up.
Oh, you also get doubles?
Yeah, it's going to be back to you double. It's technically slightly more balanced, I believe. My other one, you chose a Sony first-party game, and I will as well. I'm going to grab Ratchet & Clank.
Ah.
Rift Apart.
That was also going to be an 86.
Yeah, that's for first half of this year, so pretty confident it won't get pushed. Yeah, Insomniac is doing really well lately with all their Spider-Man games. I think it'll be great. Over to you.
All right. We're doing Halo Infinite.
Ah, we're trading games back and forth here.
And Horizon Forbidden West.
That was going to be my next one.
Your turn.
Your list is looking pretty good, Heath.
I thought this was going to be way harder.
All right. Next up, I want a slice of Resident Evil Village.
What?
Yeah, the weird title for Resident Evil 8.
Okay, good luck.
I think it looks good.
I gave that an 80.
I keep saying this. I think Capcom's on a hot streak.
Here, you know, should I post this list so people can like play along so it doesn't just sound like a shopping list?
You mean like post a link to this?
No, post a link to like all of the eligible games that we're playing with.
Oh. Sure.
Eh. Eh.
It's always gonna feel a bit like a shopping list.
All right. Resident Evil Village. It has Big Woman.
Okay.
Look it up. Oh, we're halfway through, aren't we?
Yes, we both have half of our games.
Yeah, this is gonna be quick. All right.
Wait,
I
get another one.
Okay.
I'm gonna follow it up with Gotham Knights.
Why? Why?
You don't. Maybe I should look at what available games there are.
I'm going to destroy you. You didn't do your homework. I was so ashamed of my performance, I went with the extra mile.
Breath of the Wild 2 is not coming out this year.
No
way.
No.
But what am I missing out on? You're making me second guess myself.
No, nah, Gotham Knights is, you know, who makes it?
Warner Brothers
Eidos?
Montreal.
What's their average?
Their last game, I want to say, is Batman Arkham Origins.
Here, let's just go on Metacritic.
You know what, Heath? You successfully intimidated me. I'm not picking it up.
WB Games Montreal. That's what it is.
Instead, I'm torn between two, and I'm going to go with, you know, what I've seen of their game hasn't actually made me super impressed, but you know what? I'm not going to bet against the JRPGs. I'm going to get Bravely Default 2. People love JRPGs.
Hey, I'll give that an 83.
That's by the people who made Octopath Traveler, which was well received.
Is it my turn already?
It is. Oh, you got two in a row.
Wild. Okay. Hellblade 2.
Oh, coming back for it another year.
Senua's Saga. It's coming out. It's going to be great. At least an 85.
That seems reasonable to me.
And then after that, Guilty Gear Strive. The fighting game that it will be releasing April 9th. That's fighting. Also going to be an 85.
That's coming from, who are they called?
Arxis.
Arx System Works. All right, yeah.
They print gold.
they kind of do. All right, how many do I have? One,
oh,
two.
While we're more than halfway in, time for the brief intermission. Of all the games that are coming out in 2021, here are the ones that have the worst title.
Oh.
Da, 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 da. We have East 9 Monstrum Nox.
Okay.
We have Werewolf, The Apocalypse, Earthblood. We have Near Replicant version 1.22474487139.
I'm excited for that.
Dual Universe. XO1 coming to the Xbox One X.
That's confusing.
Yo, what do you play on your One X? XO1. And then there's this game, Fist, Forged in Shadow Torch.
These are some bad titles.
And I Am Jesus Christ, coming to the PC this year.
Wow.
Those were some of the worst titles.
All right. I'm going to pick up a game that I was on my list last year but failed to come out. Kena Bridge of Spirits.
Hey!
Will be entering my roster.
I give that an 81.
And then you know what?
What do you got?
Give me that Near Replicant version 1.
That's a remake.
Oh, will I not be able to select it? I mean, you were like...
That's a new game?
You were like, throw in all the remakes.
The refs are coming onto the field.
It is a remake of the original Nier, yeah.
That's bullshit.
You were the one who argued
for
keeping it.
When I said remake, I meant like Resident Evil 2, Final Fantasy, Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, you're naming remakes like Nier Replicant version 1.22.
Man.
You can't be upset about this. I moved it to the ineligible column, and you told me to put it back.
This is a remake in the sense that, like, Need for Speed's games are remakes.
It's by a different, totally different developer. Combat is being reworked from the ground up. It's
all
on
right.
my list.
What did I give it? Should I be that upset? Maybe I sold you a stinker. Oh, I did. Yo. Oh, all right. It's back to me, right?
Yeah.
This is my last picks.
Yeah. Two, three. You got
this
two
was
more.
Quick.
You got two more.
All right. Here it comes. Axiom Verge 2.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Coming out in the first half of 2021.
That was on my list last year.
All right. My last one's going to be Little Nightmares 2.
Okay. I considered it. I don't think it's going to be
it's going to get
killer.
An 83 at least.
It won't do poorly. Why did you ignore 12 minutes, Heath?
Oh, because it's going to get 82.
You're so confident about your scores.
Yo, I did the legwork.
All right, that gives me one more. One more winner to add to my list of great video games. I was eyeing Back for Blood.
Back for Blood's going to be fine. It's going to get like an 82.
How well reviewed are the old Left 4 Dead games?
Oh, those are outstanding.
And you think this cannot live up to their legacy?
It'll get an 82.
Okay. I'm also thinking about Returnal by Housemarque.
That is going to get an 80.
Well, then Back for Blood would be the clear winner here. Tell me, Heath, what would Ghostwire Tokyo receive?
I didn't give it a rating.
Didn't make the cut? All right, then tell me this instead.
I want to look that up. What's Ghostwire Tokyo actually called?
That's the name of the game.
Oh, Ghostwire is one word with a capital W in the middle, colon Tokyo. Okay, there you go. Again, that'll be like an 81.
Okay, not quite 82 tier. I just locked in Returnal as my final
attaboy.
The draft is complete. Going forward, we will bid on games.
And what date will that be?
We usually do quarterly check-ins.
Okay.
So end of March?
Sure.
Early April? That'll be the next check-in on the draft. All right. In conclusion, E8th drafted God of War Ragnarok, Deathloop, Halo Infinite, Horizon Forbidden West, Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, Guilty Gear Strive, a weird pick.
That's going to perform better than half of your games.
Axiom Verge 2 and Little Nightmares 2.
And quintessential Chris games picked up Hollow Knight Silksong, Hitman 3, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, Resident Evil Village, Bravely Default 2, Kena, Bridge of Spirits, Nier Replicant version 8675309, and Returnal.
Kind of confusing reading each other's list, but that's what we did. So, draft is complete. I am much more concerned this year than I was last year, Heath.
Well, yeah, last year I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, what?
So I picked, like...
You just picked a lot of games that didn't end up coming out.
Wait, let me make the right joke.
Yeah, your issue last year, Heath, was your top two picks didn't even come out, so they did you no favors.
Understandable. Which was, what was funny was how Cyberpunk performed as well as Bugsnax.
It was wild watching Cyberpunk's open critic score fluctuate.
Slide, yeah.
Because it started in the low 90s when it was only PC copies in people's hands.
Yeah.
And then I checked in like a couple days later, mid 80s, and it fell all the way down to a 76.
What's going to pull through for me this year is all of my games will come out and none of them are in the 70s.
That'll be an improvement over last year.
Cool.
Cool. So that's this episode.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, I did. Big time. We don't have any emails this episode, but you can change that for next episode by writing to us at MobiusTubesPodcast@gmail.com.
That's MobiusTubesPodcast@gmail.com.
And then I'll leave your house.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.